Welcome to PW Comics Worlds. More to come, an occasional podcast of comics and graphic novel news. I'm Heidi McDonald. I'm the editor-in-chief of ComicsBeat.com and KComicsBeat.com. And for all of Publishers Weekly's comics news, you can find us at publishersweekly.com/comics, and you can find us on Blue Sky at pwcomicsworld.bsky.social.
And I'm Kate Fitzsimmons. I'm the podcast producer, and you can find us online at, I believe our current account is PW Comics World, at Twitter and Facebook, as well as the regular Publishers Weekly accounts. And you can now find us on YouTube if you haven't already.
That's right. We are now on Publishers Weekly's YouTube channel for if you want to watch us wander around about comics. Now you can do so, which everybody seems to put it on their TV and then not watch it. But that's just how people are today. So yes, Kate and I are here. We're picking up the pieces, without Calvin here to do his part. As you could tell, we're already floundering. So one other thing that Calvin would tell us is that you can usually subscribe to us on various podcast platforms, but if you are watching on YouTube, hit that like, smash that subscribe button, like, smash, subscribe. You know what to do. And so also, if you are watching us on YouTube, you can leave a comment because I guess people on YouTube love to leave comments, but you can leave us a comment anywhere because we love to hear from our listeners. So.
Maybe we should start throwing some calls to action inside our discussion.
Yes,
And what's
perhaps.
your opinion,
Yeah,
listeners? I
yes,
will try
yes,
not to be too cheesy about
yes.
it.
So this week on More to Come, we're going to be looking at the Spring Announcements issue edited by Meg Lemke. We're going to be looking at the latest in Diamond. Sorry, yes, I know it's been a year, but we're still going to look at that. New developments all the time. We're going to talk about one of the biggest piracy sites being cut down, Jim Lee's controversial comments, and what the heck happened with Angoulême. And even some more.
Hey
Okay.
listeners, now you're going to see a little bit behind the curtain. Here's a blooper. I forgot to put my headphones on.
Like I said, we are still so Kate, you know what? Just let's go even further behind the scenes. Let's just tell our listeners, because I have had people asking me, where's the podcast? And so I do know that that you miss us. We did say that we were going to be taking a break after our Gala 700th issue episode. And winter has come and we've been snowed in, which seems like ideal podcasting times, but we are going to continue on, right, Kate?
Of course, we're going to continue on. We actually have been podcasting every 2 weeks since right after Christmas. We're just, catching
Regrouping.
up. We're regrouping.
We're
So
regrouping.
Calvin is taking his retirement into a more retirement-like space. You will still be seeing him. He's not gone forever. He's just enjoying his life, and we want that for him. So it's lonely without Calvin. So we're going to be trying a bunch of different new things to try to bring in more
We
energy.
should call this podcast It's Lonely Without Calvin. Sounds like a
That,
great
listeners, another peek behind the curtain. Every time that I put up a podcast, I can get the title. That's pretty easy. But then there's a little bit where it says subtitle, and I'm like, what do I put in the subtitle this time? And this week it's going to be, It's
It's
Lonely Without
Lonely Without
Calvin.
Calvin. Yes. Indeed. Well, Kate, I it's not lonely with you. I'm glad to see you. And we are going to get back to it. It's just we're still working out
We're
on
in that
getting
experimental phase, we
we're
told
an
you.
experiment. Yeah, we're yes, our experimental phase. Yes, that's a great way to put it. Well, anyway, one person who isn't experimenting is our former podcasting colleague Meg Lemke, who remains on as the graphic novels review editor, and she has was toiling away. I think she mentioned it actually when she was last on our year review, the Spring Announcements issue, which is a whole issue of Publishers Weekly devoted to comics, and the whole package is out now. And I don't know how Meg does this. I did it when it was one article. She has a complete list of adult comics, middle grade comics, YA comics, and manga. She has an interview with Jem McCorrell, an interview with a March I'm gonna mess up this name, Marcelo Quintanilla, and also photographic legend Gary Groth, and all under a beautiful cover by Tilly Walden. So I don't, it's really great. Did you have a chance to look at the package at all, Kate, or look at the top 10 picks?
I don't recall the top 10 picks off the top of my head.
Well, I have them in front of me, so I'm going to read the ones for adult comics because, again, the announcements issue is really a great kickoff to the year of what we're going to be seeing. So, top 10, Anxiety Land by Gemma Corle. I mean, Gemma is a gem. We just ran a big interview with her on, or not an interview, excuse me, analysis of her work on The Beat. She's an elevated Kathy who's actually funny, I would have to say. But this is her first actual graphic novel, which is about her anxiety and so on. So anyway, that's one of my picks. Okay, A Bitter Pill, Randy Schultz, The Dawn of the HIV AIDS Epidemic by Xavier and Eloise Choquet. I'm really being challenged. I apologize if I'm messing it up. Bury Me Already, It's Nice Down Here, Comics on Pregnancy and Parenthood by Julia Wirtz, another absolute love her. Charity and Sylvia by Tilly Walden, which is actually a nonfiction book about a lesbian couple in 19th century Vermont. The End of the Arab of the Future, A Youth of the Middle East by Riyad Satouf. That is, wrapping up his Arab of the Future series in English. Gay Mormon Dad, I don't think I need to explain that anymore, by Chad Anderson and Remy Burke. Joe the Pirate by Hubert and Virginie Augustin. It's a rollicking history of a queer socialite. Mama Came Calling by Ezra Clayton Daniels and Camilla Sucre. Another, of course, with Clayton Daniels, such a great creator. Martyr, Loser, King by Saul Williams and Morgan Sohm. And Names and Faces, a graphic memoir by Leslie Hook. Another debut memoir through the identity issues of growing up biracial. Awesome list. Very, very, very what I would call nonfiction heavy, but okay,
Yeah,
I
the
mean.
long list is pretty good, and things that you wouldn't even expect. I'm like, well, I guess that counts, but I'm very interested to see where some of this is going to go.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say that that a lot of the picks on here do tend towards the more literary comic side of things, which is great. There's so many great books coming up, and not as quite as much on what I would call traditional fantasy comics. Another
Or
genre.
even genre at
Yes.
all.
Yes. So, well, I mean, for instance, a lot of colons, Unconditional Stories of Women and the Animals They Love by Kat Willett. Well, I just got a preview of that in my email yesterday. It looks really great. But there's a few that are a little bit more, if you do like fantasy comics, there's a couple on here.
They're mostly the British imports. There's one from
Yes.
Rebellion, New Adventures from the Trigan Empire by Michael Carroll and Tom Foster. Which is an old Rebellion comic that's now rebooted 40 years later. And also Spectres from Titan Comics by Shannon Eric Denton and David Hartman.
Yes, and one from Marvel, Daredevil, Cold Day in Hell by Charles Soule and Steve McNiven. So there's a couple on there, but it's actually really amazing how many like literary graphic novels are coming out now. I mean, it's stunning.
It's definitely a different market.
Yes. But that's just the adult list. There's also the middle grade comics list. Let's see, which I'll just quickly read off the top 10. Book of Murmurs by Candace Pirwin, Inbetweeners by Faith Erin Hicks, A Kid Like Me by Norm Fuete, Kingdom Unraveled, a closely knit graphic adventure by Mariana de Mercutio, Last Day Pool Party by Emma Steinkellner, The Marsh Fellows by Anna Laura Sullivan, Money Talks, The Brainstormers by Kwame Alexander, Cassidy Dice, and Rashad Dusay, Offside by Christiana Diaz Gonzalez and Mari Costa, Opting Out by Maya Kobabe and Lucky Srikumar, Sugar Punk by Miles Santana and Gulher Petraka. So, Kate, do you want to read the manga list and the young adult list?
Yeah, so the top 10 on the young adult list is As I Dream of You by Jennifer Lee and Lee Yuen Pham from First Second. Lee Yuen Pham is actually one of the writers of Frozen, and Pham is an Eisner winner. Before We Wake by Sophia Glock from LB Inc. Coming Out Perfect from Graphics by Richard Mercado. Everything Amplified by Ziggy Hanar and Sarah Lippitt. A lot of coming of age, a lot of queer stories, very cool. Good Morning Selwa from Abrams Fanfare by Shazleen Khan. This one's actually an Ignatz Award winner, which originally was coming out as a webtoon, so it's cool to see it in print. Just Between Us by Adeline Kahn from Dial. Ladies of the Night, yes, it's a pun, spelled with a K, by Fiona Marchbank, coming out from Oni. So hats off to, the tradition of Tamora Pierce. We've got some lady knights in here. Salvage by Renee Nalt from 10 Speed Graphic. Skating Wilder by Brian DeMays and AJ Dungo from Flying Eye. Haven't heard of Flying Eye. That's a new one. A Smile Like Yours by Emily Thomas from Kids Can. Haven't heard of that one either. So there's quite a nice long list after that one as well. I mean, honestly, I don't read a lot of YA as such, but I have to say that the kind of genre mix here is a little more my speed than the stuff coming out for adults, which maybe that says I'm immature. I don't know.
Well, I think there's a lot of queer romance on there and a lot of
But there's also a lot of adventure.
yes, but a little bit more than on the adult list. So there's also the manga list as well.
Yes. So we've got a Naoki Urasawa, we've got Billy Bat and Takashi Nagasaki coming out from Kana.
I
We've
can't
got,
wait for that. Billy Bat, finally. Everybody's been waiting for that for a long time.
Cocoon by Machiko Kyo coming out from Viz. Dungeons That Surely Slaughter Adventurers by Dalman Seiman coming out from Yen Press, where basically it's about the custodians of the kind of fantasy dungeon that you usually see in a fantasy. Fish and Water by Gingoro Tagami. Oh, good seeing something from him again. Yes, and it is translated by Ann Ishii. Not surprised, very happy about that. Coming out from Pantheon. Hide and Seek by Naono Yoshiko. Coming out from Smudge. Haven't heard of Smudge. That's a new one to me.
Well, I think it's that at the line. It's an imprint from a larger publisher, and you know what? To be honest, I can't remember which
Yeah,
one,
that's what I mean. It's an
but
imprint I'm
it
not
is.
familiar with. It's got some imprint vibes, but I don't know which one. Sorry, listeners. Can't get in touch with everything. And this is, it, in keeping with a couple other things on this list, this one's a reissue of some stuff from the 70s, horror manga from the 70s, which hasn't been translated before. That's Not Love by Piko Watanabe, coming out from Kodansha. They're still shaken this morning. Oh, they're still being shaken this morning by Aiji Matsuda from Seven Seas. Unemployed Killers Support Group, which is what it says on the tin, by Ryo, coming out from Titan Manga. Wandering Cat's Cage, coming out from Takumi Graphics, which is Fantagraphics' new Asian comics line. And Wicked Spot by Sal Jiang, coming out from Vertical, about
Yes.
an ancient witch on public media. An ancient witch on social media, sorry. I've been listening to too much NPR, you guys.
Well, awesome. I mean, this is all of four of these lists. I mean, And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, each list also has like a long list that has like I think it's 40 to 60 titles on. There's just
Yes.
no shortage of great graphic novels coming out next year for sure. And again, hat tip to Meg for putting together a great package. And we'll be talking about to some of these creators in the year to come for sure. So just as part of kind of the kicking off the year, wrapping things up, getting going, the ALA announced their awards, and there was quite a few comicsy people in the awards, but I did not have time to go through the list this time. However, most exciting, the GNCRT, Comics and Graphic Novel and Comics Roundtable, which is the librarians' organization about comics, announced their first awards, which is something they have been working on for a long time. And they don't have a fancy name. They are called the Outstanding Comics Awards. So, they could have called them the Binkies or the Pinkies or the Stinky. Anyway, they didn't. But doesn't mean they weren't great.
They could call them the Gnorts. I'm
The
sorry. GNCRT is
Yes, well,
a little
the
awkward.
winner, I'm just gonna read the out the winner in each category. For adult, it was Tongues by Anders Breckhaus Nilsson, a great book. For nonfiction, it was Insectopolis by Peter Cooper.
Insectopolis, a
Yay! We
favorite.
love that book, so I'm super excited. And the honor book was Black Arms to Hold You Up by Ben Passmore. And series, the Outstanding Comics Award for adults was The Night Eaters by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. And then for young adults, the Outstanding Comic and Fiction was The Boy Wonder, written by Junie Ba, and written and drawn by Junie Ba, great Junie Ba. And Outstanding Nonfiction, Raised by Ghosts by Brianna Lowenson, another really a book that got a lot of acclaim. And in series, the winner was Teen Titans, written by Cammy Garcia with art by Gabriel Piccolo, John Somavar, Somariva, Emma Kubert, and Rob Haynes. So great. Oh, Outstanding Comics for Children. And the winner was Froggy, A Pond Full of Pals by Paige Walsh. And in nonfiction, How to Draw a Secret by Cindy Chang. And series is Witches of Brooklyn by Sophie Escobas. So. Some great picks there, GNCRT. Good job.
Yeah, I was happy to see Insectopolis, not gonna lie.
Yeah, I thought that was an amazing book and didn't quite get the awards love that it should have last year. But we'll see. The Eisner Awards judges were announced at the Hall of Fame were announced. I'm not sure we covered that last time, but some really great picks. So we're well into award season. So here we go. Okay. Whew, let's see. All right, Diamond update. So a couple things. Always in motion, the future is difficult to see. So Diamond kind of filed its Chapter 7 financials and
Yeah, that's one thing that was easy to see in the future, sadly. Like, I'm sorry, they were circling the financial drain once this whole bankruptcy ball got rolling. It was.
yeah. And so the numbers show that there's no money left there. I forget how much. It's probably low six figures, or maybe not even that much. But in debt that they have, and new lawyers' fees and new fees, new trustee fees, blah blah blah, fee 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 fee, fee fi fo fum. So none of the creditors are ever going to get any money. And I've seen a couple of them just talking about that. I don't think there's any surprise there. I think everyone on January 15th took a loss on this, but I do think they still want their inventory back, and that matter is still not
Oh, for Pete's sake, still.
I think there is a hearing coming up to discuss the inventory, and I think if probably I mean this is just me talking about because I haven't really talk to anybody about this, but probably just they're going to have to buy back their inventory at pennies on the dollar, and that will pay for the rest of the bankruptcy. So it's pretty, I guess we're not supposed to swear here, but that's pretty screwed up.
We
That's pretty screwed up. That, I mean, again, that's a guess, but
Yeah.
In most bankruptcies, the lawyers get most of the money.
I mean, it varies on how much money there was to begin with. And in this case, there was not so much money
Right.
that it wouldn't get eaten up by the lawyers.
I just don't. I wonder now if we knew now what we knew then, would they even go through the theater of continuing to try to stay in business, which is really where a lot of the debts came from, because they had to borrow all this, they had to borrow $40 million from Chase just to keep going, and everybody kind of fled to Lunar or PRH.
As they should. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I feel like they're like a drowning man, just sort of grabbing at everything and maybe taking themselves further down. It didn't strike me as that they were like thinking the clearest when all that was going on. So
Well,
I don't know what they would have done.
I think they were thinking clearly, just not very, they were thinking in to cover their ass is what they
Well,
were
yeah, but
thinking.
that's what I mean. They weren't thinking clearly about how to cover their butts.
Yeah.
They covered their butts badly.
Yeah. Anyway, that is probably I haven't yet to do an in-depth story about this, but the collateral continues. So let's see. Okay. Well, I wrote a whole big story for the Beat that pointed out, we might have talked about this last. No, we haven't. But pointing out that a lot of publishers have not gone out of business because of Diamond's bankruptcy. But it's because they were in this kind of liminal state of business to begin with. So, like, they're very small. They had kind of, they put out one or two books a month. I mean, one of the publishers that did kind of go on hiatus was a company called American Mythology, which I never even heard of before. Doesn't mean it's not good. It hadn't crossed my path.
Yeah, because that is the nature of comics publishing, right? You have your top publishers, you have your mid publishers, you have your small publishers, all of which are businesses with offices and full-time employees, right? And then you have the ones that are like the tiny art presses, right? Or the tiny personal presses, where their passion projects and their ways for comic people to work together to make sure books they want to be out there get out there. They're not anybody's day job. They're real
Right,
publishers, but
correct. You just hit
they're
it, yes.
not full-time businesses. So for a lot of people, it's like, well, I guess I'm just going to keep those boxes of books in my back room
Right.
for a couple months until I figure out how to sell them.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I did a few case
It's
studies
legit. A
that
lot
were.
of people, great books come out that way, but it's not like anybody's going to lose their pension because there is no pension.
Correct. I mean, I did a few case studies, and that's almost, they all said exactly what you're saying. They're small publishers. I mean, American Mythology had some licenses that are like some, it's kind of a horror publisher, and they had some very well-known licenses. So it's not like they were a total, non-player. Like, what did they have? I'm sorry. We're still figuring. Let's see. Like, they had Silent Night, Deadly Night, Return of the Living Dead. Apparently they had the Three Stooges at one point. So, they were a player in their own little way. Anyway, they had announced they were going on, suspending publishing when Diamond went bankrupt. And then just this past couple weeks, they were like, hey, we're back. We're back. Hi, we're back. We're going with Prana for like kind of, I think what Prana does is marketing and also kind of a sub distribution deal with Lunar and or other distributors. We actually should dig into that, but and they're like, oh, we're going to be doing our books regularly. So they took a break and now they're back.
Smart move.
Yeah, but there's a lot of publishers who were like that. They just laid low, like you said, they had day jobs. And now they're kind of coming back. Now, one publisher that's a little bit more prominent is Distillery, which we've been
Yeah.
talking about here.
Distilleries come out with some really good, really ambitious books over the last couple of years.
It has. And, they had a unique format that was oversized and very much art forward, some great names from Eduardo Risso to Tula Lote, Jock, Brad
They were at
Azzarello.
just that pivotal point where like a big financial hit, like Diamond screwing them over, would really give them a setback.
Well,
They're just kind of in
they
mid-takeoff.
kind of blundered into it, okay, a little bit too, because they were with Lunar for distribution. And then in late 2024, they announced they were going back to Diamond as an exclusive, which everyone was sort of like, are you sure you want to do that? And they did it. And then guess what? A month later, Diamond was like bankrupt. So they got all their inventory caught up in that. And then they did find a new distributor in PRH. But anyway,
But
long
yeah,
story
it's a
short.
blow, right? It's a blow. It doesn't mean that there might not have been some bad decisions along the way, but they were at a uniquely vulnerable point financially.
They just had all the cards stacked against them, to be fair. Anyway, they have announced that it's not a, it is a hiatus, but they're calling it a pause. They're just putting the books that are coming out on pause. They said while they regroup, rethink, and replan. And so, is this a casualty of Diamond? Sort of, kinda. I do think Distillery will be back, but that said,
It's a setback.
the principals, yes, and the principals, David Steinberger and Chip Mosier, I've started a new business, which is Neon Ichiban, which is a digital comics distribution, and that's going full steam ahead. So I feel like they kind of have taken this publishing that really took a ding from the Diamond stuff, and now they're putting a lot of their energy into digital distribution again. And so, which makes sense because next story. So, Amazon's just been laying off people because Jeff Bezos doesn't have enough money. So they laid off like, I don't know, 16,000 people. And this hasn't been confirmed officially, but I heard on the grapevine that most of the people who were involved with Comixology were part of those layoffs. Now, Comixology doesn't really exist anymore, right?
Right, but Comixology became, in the way of acquisitions gone wrong, depending on how what your definition of right is, became absorbed into Kindle, and they kind of threw out all the great like advances in interface that Comixology had done. So I'm sure a lot of these people were doing Kindle comics or whatever, but
I mean,
I
the
don't
thing
know
is,
how much they were being listened to or respected, frankly.
I mean, the thing is, Comixology Originals definitely had been continuing. I have not heard any confirmation of whether it is going on or not. It all seems to be in a bit of limbo, or at least people aren't talking. It basically, Comixology, the original Comixology, which was co-founded by David Steinberger, was the beautiful bespoke
Yeah.
digital platform made for comics. When it got absorbed into Kindle, it lost all the features that it had, and that made it, designed
Made it
spec
work.
that made it work. Yeah, and I doubt that it's going to get any more. So good time to put all your effort behind Neon Ichiban, because I do think digital readers will be looking for something that actually is made for periodical comics. So, do you read digital, Kate? You do, right?
Yeah, digital is actually my primary format at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of have stopped on Kindle because one, it's unsatisfactory experience, but two, I actually primarily for like print books, print ebooks have switched over to Kobo last year when Amazon changed their download rules and were like, you can't download a Kindle ebook or a Kindle comic outside of one of our apps. Like, you can't save it on your hard drive. You can't save it for backup. And Kobo still lets you do that. So I was like, I don't know. Am I too lazy to switch to Kobo? But I did switch, and it's great. And everybody, Kobo's your friend. You should try it. It's cool. But I didn't. I have to say, I haven't been like buying digital comics anywhere but like Humble Bundle or like the Webtoon apps over the last couple years, because after Comixology became Kindle Comics, I was like, this is not worth my money. I am not spending money on this crap. It's too much of a pain in the butt.
I
So
am
I still
not
read them on
spending.
my Kindle Fire, but I read them on my comics reading apps on my Kindle Fire.
Kate, when you're doing the notes for this episode, it should be It's Lonely Without Calvin, and I'm not spending money on this crap.
It's true.
It is true.
Interface is so important. And the funny thing is, if your interface is more annoying than me literally clicking through a PDF from Humble Bundle, literally the like most basic interface you could imagine, I don't know what to say to you.
I mean, I'm the same. I mean, I need to read when I need to read comics, and they just send me a PDF. I just load it up on my. To be fair, I have an iPad Pro, which is larger,
Right, but
and
I mean, screen-wise, I
just
like
fire it up
my
and read
Kindle
it.
Fire. It's a good little tablet. It does all the good little tablet things. I'm not against Kindles, and I certainly wasn't against Kindle ebooks before they stopped letting me download them for safekeeping. And if listeners, you're like, wait, why does that matter? Why can't you download them for safe? What does that matter? The answer is because sometimes publishers go under, and the rights go into limbo. And you can't download your ebook anymore. And then also, and in my opinion, worse, but some people will disagree with me. As per the example of Lisa Kleypas or Linda Kleypas, sometimes authors will decide they don't like the way their book used to be, and they're going to rewrite it to be totally different and make less sense. And then the new updated edition will automatically update in your Kindle. And it's like, I made all my characters better people. And I'm like, that's great. But now your plot doesn't make any sense.
Well, it is a time of great turmoil in the digital comics landscape. So, I mean, again, this is all just me hearing things. It hasn't been confirmed. Amazon has made no announcements about the fate of Comixology or Comixology Originals, but we do know that Inky Pen, which is kind of this little like Nintendo Switch-based digital comics platform. I know they're based out of Norway. They filed for bankruptcy. I haven't been able to find out too much more about that just because it's a foreign bankruptcy and doesn't have as much information about it. But they are pretty much gone. But Neon Ichiban has launched, and the Suite, which is another one, they are readying to launch. Of course, Global Comics is still around. So there's all these other platforms. It's a new kind of bake-off going on.
Yeah.
So,
We'll see. I mean, at least it's better than the days when every single comic had its own app.
Which makes sense for some people, but like, I don't know. Like, yeah, when every publisher had their own app, that was a bad thing.
No, but sometimes, I mean, it used to be you'd had to download the comic as an app. It's even worse. So you'd have like 10 like Star Trek comics sitting on your amongst your apps on your phone. It was ridiculous.
So a lot of motion there, and I want to get back. We'll get back to one more online comics thing, but before we do, just one more print comics news. And this was a little interesting. Oni announced that they were leaving Lunar for PRH, and
I mean, nothing against Lunar, but PRH is great.
well, they are. But again, they are not, they're the world's biggest book distributor. They're not set up for periodical comics, but they have adapted to it. But you know, it's been a rocky road. I mean, there was a lot of damages at the
Yeah.
beginning, years ago, to be fair. But I mean, yes, PRH is not going to go out of business. We know that.
Exactly.
Yes. So, and I mean, I think Lunar's been the, MVP really for 2025. But even their co-owner, Christina Merkler, whenever she does an interview, their resources were taxed. So this kind of leaves a split Marvel, I believe Marvel, Dark Horse, Boom, now Oni are with PRH, and then Kodansha, some manga imprints. And then over at Lunar, we have DC, we have Image, we have Mad Cave, and a few more. So anyway, it's yeah, the deck chairs will continue to be shuffled. Okay, so this is a huge story. Bato manga piracy sites shut down. What does this mean, Kate?
Okay, so Bato, or some people call it Bato To, because it would be Bato, usually .to, although they had some backup sites, was the king of piracy sites. It's estimated that its owners were bringing in about $57,000 a month in ad revenue. Not a million-dollar business, but not bad for piracy. But more to the point, we always say, oh, this site got taken down, that site got taken down. This is different. This is enough that, like, I'm like looking on my Instagram and I see like angry manhwa fans going, well, how will I read my manhwa now? And other people are like, well, you could pay for it. And they're like, well, but I like to read a lot of it. And the microtransactions on the manhwa apps are like brutal. It's really expensive if you want to read a lot of it at a time instead of one free episode every day. And I sympathize with that, but I do think that it does sort of show a potential window for where the webtoon and manhwa market could make some money. Because, some people were just going like, this is my favorite pirate site, what am I going to do? But there were a lot of other people saying, hey, I didn't even really want to pirate, but financially, I don't, unless I want to wait for it to come out in print, if I want to read any kind of satisfying chunk of story, it's financially untenable. Why don't you have a Netflix model? Why don't you have a Kindle Unlimited model? Why isn't there something for the people who want to read a lot of it at once to just pay you a monthly fee? And I think that might be a way forward. I think it shouldn't just be that, because there are a lot of people like me who will follow like one or two titles per app, and they don't mind reading like very short bursts every single day. That's me. But, and for me, it doesn't end up costing money because of that. But if you want to read like large chunks at once, and you start mentally adding up how much all those like individual coins cost, it could really add up. So the fact that like people, instead of just in their like tiny corners of like Reddit, subreddit slash piracy talking about, it's not just that, it's like literally people making YouTube videos about, here's what you can do now that there isn't this piracy site, or people being like, what shall I do now that there's no piracy site, says that this was a 700-pound gorilla. And also, it was very heavily aimed specifically at webtoons. Like, it had regular manga, it had, other comics, but it did have, your scanslations or whatever. But primarily, it was carrying huge numbers of webtoons.
Wow, scraping. So why did it shut down?
Well, it shut down because of the Japanese government's much heralded piracy hunting AI. The Japanese government used its little piracy hunting AI, managed to actually track down where the servers were and who was behind it, and government came for them.
Wow, so this was a big operation.
Yeah, it was a huge operation.
Interesting. Well, so there's no Netflix model, all you can eat subscription service that covers this kind of thing. I mean, I think with Webtoons, it's micro payments, right? It's micro
Right, Webtoons
transactions.
is currently micropayments.
Right.
And that's annoying. So
I think for Tappy
for
Toons, I do think some of them do have like a monthly subscription, right?
some of them, but Tappy Toon is not top of the line selection, right? And Tappy Toon will also, some of the older ones, the older, more popular ones, you can read free ad supported. So
Right. Okay.
for example, currently I'm reading S Classes I Have Raised on there, and that one came out a couple years ago, so that one is now on the free model. But if you're reading something that's a little newer or not on Tappy Toon, which is to say most of it, you're not on an all-you-can-eat model or anywhere near.
Right.
Now,
Right.
Japan has been starting to bring some out for their digital manga, where you can pay a membership, you can read a huge catalog. But right now, the Korean and Chinese webtoons, it's either you pay microtransactions, or you watch a lot of really terrible ads. When I say really terrible ads, I mean like for knockoff video games.
Oh, I mean, I played, listen, I play video, mobile phone games. I know what you're talking about with the terrible ads and, they're soul crushers. So yes, no more of those.
So, for the heavy webtoon readers, I wish you well. I read a lot of them, but I haven't needed to pirate them. But I would love if there was a Netflix for webtoons too. That'd be great. I'd pay
Well,
money.
we'll see. Again, the digital comics industry is in a lot of
Lots.
flux. Well, speaking of manga, Jim Lee, the publisher and of DC Comics, he has a lot of titles, but I'm just going to say that one. He was in Japan. I know because I follow him on Instagram and showed him and his family in Japan. Anyway, I guess he did an interview there and he said, "The stories told in Japanese manga and anime are incredibly powerful. I often find myself wondering what is missing in Western comics and why aren't they able to achieve the same flavor?" He went on to compare. Also, I think manga has an advantage over American comics, which are mostly about superheroes, and that's where the majority of sales and readers are concentrated. Not quite, Jim, but okay, sure. In
Well,
periodical
what
comics,
I
yes.
will say is it's not all connected here in the United States, right? Like you need to be pretty, it's not the stuff that you're hearing about in popular culture in the wider world is either the children's stuff or something that's been adapted into a movie or superheroes. And in Japan, it's not a niche literary genre or alternately a niche hobby where if you're not into the hobby or you're not into that section of the bookstore, you have no idea it exists. That yes, those
Right.
ranges of genres like stories about cooking and soccer are front and
Well,
center and
yeah,
well known to the
but
public.
I mean, what I like, I mean, I've been away, so I know this came out while I was kind of away and preoccupied, so I didn't have time to fully enjoy the outrage that followed, because
Oh, the
apparently there was like
outrage, especially the big outrage, I think, is comes from this line. I'm very happy that manga has been so successful because it gives me a goal to aim for. The manga market is bigger than our industry, so the question becomes, what can we learn from this? And this immediately sparked off the hardcore, like, American comics fans of the specifically like DC Marvel type being like, oh my God, he's gonna try to turn it into manga. Ah, there was some racism, listeners. There was some
Whoa.
racism because Jim Lee is of the Asian variety of Lee, not the Caucasian variety.
He's not Stan Lee's brother. No, we
Exactly.
know the only spiritual brother. Yeah.
So,
Well,
there were fireworks. Now, a lot of cooler heads were like, hey, this isn't a big deal. He's just saying that more genres is good, which would be the rational answer. But you know, I will say,
Well,
I
oh, go on.
think maybe some of this, even quite aside from the racism and the parochialism, is the American comics industry has tried to do manga very badly over the last 30 years, where they'll get some American person and be like, hey, can you like put some schoolgirls in it and make it look more like manga? And it's like, oh God, please stop. So I can understand that some people might be afraid of going in that direction. Jim Lee has a better handle on things than that, I think I can trust in this particular case. I don't think that's where they're going with it.
Well, I mean, I wrote an article back in September that was called the article that should terrify the American comics industry, and I got very similar pushback. But I mean, I was kind of pointing out, I mean, Jim is very smart, okay, very smart executive, very smart human being. I mean, he's not,
He doesn't need to be.
blind, deaf, and unable to speak. I mean, he can look around him and see the impact that manga and anime have had on our world. The biggest movie in the world this year was Demon Slayer, not Avatar. Okay, although I might not have that, but last year it was all Demon Slayer. So anyway, he's just looking around and seeing the world around him. And I mean, what I pointed out in my article is that in Japanese industry, there was this article in the New Yorker that laid it all out. They have an industry that takes 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 young creators, says, you're great. We're going to exploit the hell out of you. And then they get the next Naruto or the next One Piece or the next Demon Slayer. And in America, we don't have that at all. We don't have any system to nurture young talent. And in fact, like it's even, I've talked to quite a few people about this, and like, the idea, I know I said this on the podcast before, but it bears repeating. Frank Miller was 25 when they gave him Daredevil. I think he was like 27 when he did Dark Knight. The idea of giving someone under 30 the reins of Batman or Spider-Man now was unthinkable, right? Like, you have to pay your dues and learn.
Well, even quite aside from that, like Naruto, we're not going to talk about Boruto. Sorry, man, no. But actual Naruto and Demon Slayer and so on were original properties being given that kind of juice. Like, it's not so much that they were like, oh, we'll take a young person and we'll put them on this pre-existing property. No, it's, hey, we are going to see what pitches we can get from young people for original properties, and then if it looks good, we're gonna back it.
And we can't do that anymore. We can't,
We
Absolute
can't.
Batman, Absolute Wonder Woman. I mean, the Absolute line has been a huge hit, and huge props to Scott Snyder and Murray Javens, Jim Lee, the whole DC team, and really pulling it off. And I just, retailers, young readers are flooding into comic shops to read these books. And they are manga influenced in terms of the storytelling. They're not drawn like manga, because that, like you say, Kate, that would be a disaster, right?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways where it doesn't show up to my eye because I have been reading comics for the last 30 years, so it looks like a normal part of the art range to me. But if, like, my boomer parents have, I say this with love, they're the great kind of boomer, see them, my dad's like, oh, that looks kind of Japanesey. And I'm like, does it? Because there's been enough cross-cultural pollination throughout the comics world from Asia to Europe to America, that, you know, great comics artists are have been influenced by each other visually. Like, you know, each country still has its own distinct look, but that look has been in conversation with each other. And but that's authentic, as opposed to taking someone who normally draws in a more Western influenced style and being like, do a bad imitation
I
of
mean, look,
Japanese.
the bottom line is, for any art form, is that art evolves,
It does.
okay? It can't, if you're sitting around and saying, I want my comics just like they were in the 90s. You're like my parents who were watching TCM and they literally, NCIS, okay? Like, I did not know about NCIS. That's a whole different podcast. But anyway, 19 or 2001, NCIS, right? At Timeless. But yeah, look, here's the thing. I mean, we're just watching the Grammys the other night, right? And people are like, Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, what year is this? They are not young anymore. Lady Gaga's like 40, okay? And like, would you completely have the music industry only old people? You wouldn't do it, And like, here's the thing. Like, when Frank Miller walked in that door, other creators, Ann Nesenti, she was saying she was only in her early 20s when she followed Frank on Daredevil. Artists, I look, I say this as a senior myself. When you're young, you have this flash of inspiration that you lose as you age. And it's fine, you get other things as you age, and it all evens out. But, American comics, by cutting off young creators, are cutting off the greatest inspiration that there is. Okay.
Yeah, and not only that, but by cutting off, you're not gonna get a new superhero or whatever. But
Why not?
well, I mean, it's a different. But what I'm saying is, DC and Marvel. I'm glad DC's bringing back Vertigo. I think this is them going back in that direction a little bit. But there was definitely a period of time when they weren't doing the imprints really, where original books and original ideas, they just weren't taking it. They're just like, well, nobody wants random superheroes, so we're not going to do anything new. And it's like, okay, maybe not a superhero. Maybe do frickin' Coffin Hill. Whatever. Maybe aim to be like, the next huge horror book or whatever. Like that fresh ideas from creators who you haven't heard of before were being relegated to the smallest of publishers. The big publishers were just not touching it because it wasn't a guaranteed gold mine. But the thing is, you have to continue to take that chance on the new properties, or you're not going to get the next gold mine.
I absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like like Japan is well aware that they need a constant churn of new properties because older properties finish. Also, creators, not everybody's a Eiichiro Oda just keeping on with One Piece for 30 years.
And to be fair, we're specifically talking about manga. They're actually having a crisis in their anime industry because the anime industry, is neglecting their on-ramp of new workers, that they are not giving them full-time jobs, they are not giving them livable pay. And so, like rational human beings, they are going searching for artwork, work doing art somewhere else. So now the anime industry is in a crunch where, like, there have been a number of articles coming out. I'm not taking this out of my
Oh yeah,
mind.
no.
I
This
just
is
literally read an
I've been
article
seeing them
about it like
too.
yesterday,
Yeah, seeing it as well.
where there's a lot of demand for anime. There's a lot of people who want anime. There's money to make anime, and there aren't enough anime workers because they've been taking off that off ramp. They've been taking off that. Like, hey, you can get a full-time job that pays okay doing this. Like, maybe not amazing, but okay. It used to be not great, but okay. And now it's unlivable.
Well, I
And
mean,
they're
I would,
suffering from it. And
yeah, and
it's
I mean,
gaining
yeah.
fans.
And I mean, yeah, it's a problem. You got to have the on-ramp. But I would point to what we were just talking about at the beginning of the podcast about the middle grade and YA books. In book publishing, yeah, they're always hungry for hot new creators, and you usually have to get an agent is how you do it there, but they are ready to take a chance on people who, I don't want to use the word burnt out, but look at Dennis Camp. He's the hottest writer going. I believe he is over 35, if he's around 35, right? Like, You have to pay your dues, right? Like everybody's got to slog through the salt mines of doing their indie book, doing their image book. Oh, finally I got noticed by Marvel and DC. Now I'm doing it. Oh, and I'm the greatest. You know, by the time you get to that point of having paid your dues, you're just not the same fresh-faced, inspired person that you were when you came
And
right
some
out
of
of
it
art
isn't
school.
even age. Some of it is literally a lot of writers, specifically writers, have maybe 3 to 5 great ideas deep down in them that have been germinating in their brain since they were about, I don't know, 12, or coming from somewhere deep inside them. And they may not be someone who has an infinite well of amazing things in there. And if that is on your image book that nobody read and the big publishers don't want to buy, then they're going to do workmanlike work, but they're great work is the work you don't want.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah. And look, I'm not saying old people bad, young people
But I just
good.
meant
I'm just
like,
saying, why not both? Why not
yes,
both? And, you know,
why not both? But also, just I
yeah.
meant creators, quite frankly, who are not like, you haven't ignored their passion projects, right? That the passion projects are not buried under a mountain somewhere. And only after they've, gotten like a few polite claps at the Ignatz Awards 20 years ago, now they're a big name. But they're a big name who's already used up their juice because you didn't want it when they had it.
Yeah. Or they've just used up that youthful enthusiasm. You
That
know, like
too, but I
again,
just meant
I'm
even
yeah.
both. It's
Yeah.
both,
I mean, I'm
right?
not, I just say you need it all. You need both kinds. And, you know, Jim Lee, you're wondering what you could do. I mean, Jim, if you're listening, which you're not, you know what I'm saying. You and I have talked about it. You know exactly what I'm saying. So but that's if I were to, you know, say, DC, how do you be more like manga? I'm like, give the kids a chance. Just roll the dice, man. Take a chance. Just take a freaking chance. What's the worst that could happen?
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of old timers, what the original old timer, Will Eisner, story in the New York Times this week that the rights to his IP library are up for sale. And his nie nephew, Carl, and his wife have been the custodians of the Eisner legacy for many years since Will died, which I believe was the early aughts. And well, his wife passed away. Eisner's wife, Anne, passed away after that. So since she died, they have been the custodians. They do Will Eisner Week. They really keep his name out there as the pioneer of graphic novels that he is. And now the library is up for sale because, you know, they are not publishers. They are not, you know, I mean, let somebody who really cares about it get it. I mean, it includes the rights to the spirit. It includes A Contract with God, his seminal graphic novel, a lot of other graphic novels, the Tenement and the To the Heart of the Storm, a lot of other books that Eisner did. So it's quite a valuable library. That said, are they going to get the amount of money that they it deserves? Probably not. But it's up for sale, and I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe they need it.
Well, I mean, I think it's just, yes, I think it's the fact that they are just wanted to find a good, safe home. You know, a lot of people in this industry are getting to the time where they're like, oh, what do I do with my stuff? It's a question I'm dealing with myself. What do I do with my stuff? So, you know, trying to find a home for that. You know, the spirit is obviously the gem of the crown there, but unfortunately, there was a spirit. There's actually been two spirit movies. Neither of them set the world on fire. The first was a TV kind of pilot movie, fondly remembered by some. The second was the Frank Miller directed version that was a freaking flaming fire, dumpster fire of a disaster of a movie, kind of
A,
legendarily
yeah,
bad.
it was legendarily like, I'm going to ignore what this is and substitute what I want it to be.
So,
And thus
well,
lose the entire point in the first
yeah.
place.
So that might have tainted the IP for all times, but we shall see. So good luck to the Eisner estate to find a worthy home for us, really one of the most valuable and revered comics libraries. Well, speaking of also revered, okay, well, Angoulême did not happen. And the comics festival, there was kind of like a Angoulême off sort of, they normally hold like a, a slam dance festival to Sundance. So that kind of indie festival was held. I know the city had some events. So where we're at now is Dean Simons, who's been covering the story for The Beat, continues to be doing outstanding reporting on this. But apparently the I want to get this right because there's so many stakeholders, but the city is calling for new proposals for a new festival that would be in March 2027. And they don't, this will not be FIBD. This will be a whole, that one is done as far as they're concerned. Now, the Frank Bondeau, the Bond villain who is running, used to run the show and had been criticized for,
Lawsuit
sexism.
o'clock.
Yes, lawsuit o'clock. He's announced that they are suing. They can't do this. They're stealing their intellectual property, yada, 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 yada. So it's a
How
little
dare
bit.
you have another festival in the place where I had a festival? That's
Yeah.
not fair. I own your town.
Well, he didn't, but
No,
like he
I
was
know,
in
but
cahoots with the people who own the festival. Like as I've always understood, there's three entities for the Angoulême Festival. There is the town, right, which is has a stake in the festival. There is the festival organization, which technically owns the festival and all of that, and then there is the company that they hire to run the
right,
festival, which is Frank
which is
Bondeau's
his
company. Right.
company, which is 9E Art Plus.
Correct. Correct. Yes. So it's a little bit French because they do love the drama, but we shall
Yes, but
see.
comics also love the drama, so put the
Com
two together and
Well, boy, they nobody does it like the French. Look, no offense, I love you guys, je t'adore, but let's see. Okay, so just a quick wrap up here. We try to stay away from some of the events going on in the world because it is our mission to cover comics, and comics are important. But of course, a lot is going on in the world,
so,
and
hey, listeners, if you don't want to hear about a bummer,
well, no, these are heartlived. Actually, what we're about to do are heartwarming stories about.
they're okay. If you
Yes,
can't
we're going to
handle
do only
current world
uplifting.
events, I get it. Tune out now.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, look, we know that what's going on in Minneapolis is very, very bad, and in other places in the United States, and because of the heavy-handed violence and, tear gassing of children and lies, frankly, of ICE and DHS. But, people are standing up. On The Beat, we have an interview with Xander Cannon, who is a cartoonist who lives in Minneapolis. He gives a very, very clear, concise, very, very informative view of just what life is like there now. And but also a lot of people were inspired by Greg Ketter, who is the owner of Dreamhaven Books. And there was a very iconic photo. This guy is like 70 years old, and he's walking out of a cloud of tear gas and yelling, I don't want this anymore. Like I'm sick. I'm saying, he was saying, I'm sick, 70 years old, and I'm sick of this, speaking for many. So he is a former Eisner winner, as the Spirit of Retailing. So definitely kind of an icon for us.
His
Let's
shop
see.
is the oldest continuously operating comic shop in Minneapolis.
Yes, he is a legend, absolute legend. And then, going viral, those photos. I think this is kind of interesting that Headlock Comics, which is a small company that specializes in comics about wrestling and by a lot of wrestlers, they teamed up with the wrestler Brody King, and they did a, and also Daniel Warren Johnson. Let's not forget Daniel Warren Johnson. So they teamed up for a benefit comic and with wrestling, because Daniel Warren Johnson's really into wrestling. So, and they raised like $50,000 to help the various organizations on the ground in Minneapolis. And then when Brody King was wrestling on Wednesday night against MJF, the AEW champion, very loud, I'm paraphrasing, screw ice chant broke out in the arena for, or the whatever it was, the state theater, quite loud. So, kind of a nice little bouquet there for Brody King. You know, Brody King and Janie Warren Johnson, thank you for fighting for freedom and the true spirit of America.
Yeah.
So, you know, the resistance is out there, and people are taking a stand, and it does. I consider these feel good stories, but that they
Yeah.
have to do it is what is sad. So, I don't know. Did we get it all, Kate? So,
Yeah, I think we did.
once again, if you are watching this on YouTube, please leave us a comment and let us know. If you're listening on one of our podcast platforms, please leave us a comment or a rating or write to us. You know where to find us. Email us. You can hit us up on all our social media at PW Comics World.
Tell us
And
a funny subtitle for a future episode.
yes. And so we will be back on a more semi-regular schedule. We're probably not going to be weekly, at least not right now, but we will be
Current
back a little
plan
bit more
is we're aiming
regularly.
for bi-weekly.
Yes.
So 2 episodes a month, generally speaking. We'll see if we can keep that up. Maybe we can give you a little more, a little few bonuses on top when we can.
Yes. So, well, so just to be reassured, until next time, there will be more
Do.
come.